want to pick up on the conversation we had at your studio last, where you were in the process of creating a work with bicycles and fences that referenced broken bits of information, integrated music in the hollow parts of the fence, which were meant to echo dialogue in some way. Could you speak a little more about this work and where you're at with it now?
So the last time we met, which was about 2 years ago, I was looking at bicycles abandoned across the city. And this became part of a series of collages that I was making where, you know, lots of sort of broken things came together to somehow redetermine their function. And the bicycle bits became the fence that they had been abandoned on. So it becomes somehow the landscape becomes a part of their bodies in some ways. But I didn't quite manage to resolve the work conceptually, and it still sits in my studio. Because I think what I want to do is to make it lighter, perhaps, in a not so narrative. That's something that keeps coming back into my work, where, you know, I suppose I come from a narrative tradition. You know, storytelling is important to me, and fiction is important to me because I think of a fiction being created of many truths. And so I suppose storytelling is part of that interest. But the work that I did make around, you know, you talk about sound, and that was something that I was thinking through in that work, which actually was called Ode to the Piano Pen. And there are three of these works that I did last December, which actually speak about silence rather than a sound. These works were, you know, about uncertainty and recalibration. And instead of stating the fact, there was a visible process of editing, of cancellation, of reconsidering.
And that's also picking up on how you've used time with the city in your work. Say, for instance, where you're right now in Bristol, I remember you mentioning that your daughter Natasha and your family were instrumental in making this decision of your shift to the UK. But after being in Bristol for, it's been what, 4 or 5 years now?
Five years.
So you mentioned how you felt you had lost your voice and the confidence that you had as an artist in Pakistan to make work, because you almost felt compelled into making work about something that you'd always pushed away from earlier, this nostalgia of the past. And in a way, this experience uprooted you, but you've also fought against it.
There's so many ways of approaching that question. You know, living in Pakistan, say post 9/11, you know, we often, you know, one was invited for exhibitions outside of Pakistan, and always there was this implicit, although, you know, between the lines sort of expectation that one would be the native informant. But there was a kind of, you know, requirement to almost be direct. And it does sort of compromise work, and it does contaminate the way you think about things. And, you know, I'm so aware of that. And in terms of time, I think we all, you know, experience it in so many ways which are almost impossible to articulate. The only time perhaps we live entirely in the present is when we are faced with danger. And that's something I think about in context of change, where you are suddenly hyper alert for a moment and everything is new. You look at everything in a telescopic way. And then it passes. But, you know, these works that I did with the cement factory, for example, or the water towers in Lahore, are about other intangibles as well. And the image and the material point to geographies and temperature and humidity or aridity, you know, parched air, fear and despair, but also smell of age, of ambition, of gentrification and poverty, of another country, of that which is foreign to you and that which is home. And all of these things are political in their relationship to the body and its response to power.
Before I come back to cement factory, another work that I wanted to bring in was about what you had mentioned when you were in Bristol, you were going to create work about the city itself. And your recent work, An Unquiet Grave, documents the history of Bristol and addresses suppressed records that would, in a way, alter history's perspective. It also speaks about how you're thinking about exhibition participation and avoiding this tokenistic view of identity in that work, but at the same time bringing in aspects of re-looking at a history that has otherwise been tried to, well, people have tried to suppress that, to forget it in some sense.
I think the impulse in that work was not to alter history so much, but perhaps to draw attention to the numerous historical moments that are deliberately, as you say, and transparently concealed in, you know, British archives and withheld from educational curriculum and public conversation. And perhaps all periods have been so, but in the years that I have been in Britain, there seems to be a real transformative shift in the questions being asked, not the answers given. But and that has led to more effort being made to control the narrative, in fact, threatening the autonomy of, you know, the creative sector or public museums, etc. And the tokenism I may have spoken of is also the effort made on the part of the public institutions across the board, you know, museums, universities, political councils, funding bodies, to have a public face that seems to acknowledge a need for pluralism. And in the world of visual images that we occupy now, it's fairly easy to have photos of people of all colors, class, and abilities on a public-facing, on all public-facing material. But this doesn't always represent the truth of what happens behind the images, behind that public interface that we know. But this city, known to be, you know, radical and disobedient, reveals so many skeletons in its closet. It only sort of revealed itself, you know, slowly. And of course, the BLM movement really highlighted a lot of those aspects as well. And I suppose I need some distance from it to be able to turn it into something that is not just literal rage, which, you know, I think it was James Baldwin who says it's a sign of despair.
I think also what you've done in some of your earlier works when it comes to this idea of your images being record holders, which is also what this work has done, is the elements of construction, demolition, development, and this underlying sense of politics from concrete structures to the daily lives of people. And one sees this sense of crumbling time in your works of, say, The Anatomy of a Landscape with the Cement, and then The City of a Thousand Rebellions on Sarwar Road, 26 July 2011, which was about the, where you speak about the red dust of the city. And yet at the same time, the way you work with these images also moves into the relationship of the image and text. Say, for instance, in the conversations with Karamatullah, for instance. Mm-hmm.
The photograph itself has changed so much in the definition of the photograph, you know, over the past, I don't know, 30 years or something. It used to be sort of considered evidence. And then in this age of, you know, the kind of fake news, post-Photoshop, there's been a loss of trust in the photograph. And the photographs that I took, for example, of Karamat Sahab for that work, I look at very differently here. And, you know, more, in fact, in the way that Susan Sontag talks about the photograph as an act of violence, where, you know, you capture an image of someone who will never look at themselves the same way. I consider myself somebody who doesn't see work as finished at all. It's always in process.
Even when you talk about the landscape, it's something that's constantly in flux. It's something when, from the time that you've documented it to the time when you go back to it, even if it's something that is a structure, there is still change that you end up noticing with it. And that is the change that you, in a way, are preserving or holding on to. And wider addressing of cities and politics in some way.
And I think material is interesting. I mean, material is sort of, does that anyway. I don't think in that case, there's another way that the work is in process constantly. So, for example, I document a building collapsing and releasing all this brick dust. The bricks get taken away, the dust settles into other things and gets embedded into other houses that are made in the area and continues to live. And I feel that in itself is also evidence, and you know, and it settles into other places. It's also, while I was making that one, Lahore being on the border of India, and the fact that the dust settles in both places, and the dust is carried around to places where humans are forbidden.
But also bringing that into the sense of human connections and the personal, it's about how family is also woven into your work in some way, and how your personal life comes into all of these elements. One sees this in Prototype for Father in both 2015 and 18, and how you're looking at these elements of family ties, of geographies and time. And also now in Bristol, this geographical shuffle between Pakistan and Bristol, and how these two are very contrasting experiences, yet it's something that you're living every day pretty much.
I moved to the UK very late in my life, having always lived in Pakistan. And we moved to Bristol voluntarily at a time when there was one of the biggest migrant crises in contemporary times, you know, across Europe. And my response to the move was therefore, you know, quite more cerebral than it was emotional. And I think that, you know, when you leave a place, the only place that you know well, it's a very destabilizing experience, even at the best of times. It, you know, even travel is. So when we moved here, I have a small daughter who was 4 when she moved here, and she kind of settled into the whole, children are more adaptable. And, you know, I also lived through her. And I think about the connection that you're talking about, which is this generational thing. And all my life, I've lived with parents who went through the trauma of partition and never really spoke about it. And so I think what also happens is that, one, we've all moved without having moved. We inherit the trauma of this kind of migration. And so I thought that I know what it's about. I thought I knew what moving is about. I need to move. Whether it's in my work or in my thought, I'm not somebody who is comfortable being still or being comfortable. When I actually moved here, I found that a few things happened. I was very cold and I hadn't expected it, because when you know, I have spoken about these intangible things that we respond to, which is temperature, for example, or, you know, the rain on parched earth in Karachi is entirely different from this melancholic, grey, endless rain in England. And so my response to that is not something, I wanted to find a cerebral response to it, but my body had other ideas. And so, you know, and language is something like that as well, that, you know, I was so used to speaking bilingually and thinking bilingually. I think of emotional things in Urdu and I think of other things in English. And I couldn't mix the two up because there was nobody to speak to, even within the family. And so I think there was a kind of something I had to hold back. I think about the pain of remembering, but also the dangers of forgetting. And language plays a big role in it. I do feel that, as, you know, somebody who has a child, I think about what my role is to pass on to her. And or would she, like I did from my parents, inherit a kind of sense of how I feel, and rather than my having to communicate it. So the Prototype of a Father, which is a work that you were asking about, was literally just a kind of holding of an image of my father sitting in a chair endlessly through his last days. And what happened was, which as it does when we move between places, is every single time I left, I would look back at him and wonder if I would see him again. So that image sort of remained in my head, and I kept going back to it, but I never actually showed that work. It was almost as if it didn't want to be seen, and twice, I think, I have tried to exhibit that work, and both times the work has almost self-destructed.
Coming back to this way of how you are looking at living between two places now, though the experience may seem like a contrast, it's also how you're going to move forward into time, into age, into all of this with a sense of embracing it rather than resisting it.
I find that I inhabit many homes quite comfortably, and I know how to transform into something else in different places. And so I, you know, when I go to Karachi, for example, between the airport and my mother's home, the taxi, in the taxi ride, I find myself, you know, you encounter different smells, you encounter a different language altogether, you encounter a different temperature. I'm sitting in a seat which feels different. Everything. So by the time in an hour I actually arrive at my mother's house, I am a different person. And so I kind of inhabit everything from a different time. And instantly I can drive, I can go out and start doing things. So I, you know, there is a kind of seamlessness about being in both places. When I first came here, I used to think that I physically arrived here, but it took months for my head to sort of arrive. It kind of slowly, sometimes I would walk in the streets and look up and think, oh, what are all these white people doing here? So one of the things that struck me the most is, I mean, you know, I grew up in Karachi, which is like this urban center, really ugly. There's buildings that are being made and demolished at the same time, which means that the city is always in a state of, I don't know, like rubble or something. And so this is what I'm used to. This is where my visual vocabulary has developed. Then I come to a place like England or Bristol particularly, which is surrounded by gorgeous countryside. And it's just so incredibly picturesque that I found it really unproductive, because I felt like it was like being on holiday for a while, or it was like it kind of generated this sense of melancholia, which wasn't very productive for me. And it took me a while to understand what it is, what the landscape and, you know, and temperature was doing to me. And I still don't. I don't think I'm used to it. I think in my mind, it still exists always in relation to something else. So I don't have a comfortable relationship with either. And this ambivalence is very much part of my work. One of the privileges, I think, of inhabiting multiple perspectives is that you are always skeptical.